The movie Crazy Rich Asians was a big box office hit in the U.S., earning its top spot in the top 10 highest grossing romantic comedies of all time, according to Box Office Mojo. That's led some people to say we're seeing a rebirth of the rom-com genre. But our next guest says it actually never died completely. It's just been subtly changing over the years. Catherine Morrissey is an assistant professor in the School of Cinema at San Francisco State University. She's the author of a three-part series for Flow Journal titled From Crazy Rich Asians to Netflix, the, quote, rebirth of romantic comedies. Catherine, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, once upon a time in my youth, certainly, romantic comedies, they were often box office gold, right? Can you take us back to that, what was it, 80s, 90s heyday of the romantic comedy?
Yeah, we saw a big, big surge in those films in the 80s and 90s after a kind of quieter period. And they were really financially successful for Hollywood because they, well, depending on who was starring in them, they could cost, you know, not that much to make, but they tended to get a lot of popularity and a lot of ticket sales. So they were seen as a really good product within Hollywood.
And they seem to slip away, though. What happened? Why didn't they hold up that box office domination?
Well, it's hard to know if there's any, you know, one reason. In general, movie ticket sales have been declining. You know, less people go to the movies. There's a lot of other kinds of entertainment people can pursue. But, you know, more broadly, there have been less romantic comedies made in the last 10, 15 years. And part of that is because, you know, the movie industry is getting, putting a lot of money and time and investment in these really big budget global media franchises, and they don't have as much to spend on these kind of medium budget romantic comedy films.
Let's listen to a bit of one of those classic romantic comedies. This is 98. Is it that late? You've Got Mail. This is a scene with Tom Hanks and Dave Chappelle, who was in that. Who remembers?
So I suppose she's carrying a copy of a book with a flower in it?
Not really.
Oh, she could be a real dog, man.
I'm only staying 10 minutes. I'm going to say hello, I'm going to have a cup of coffee, and then I'm going to split. That's what I'm going to do. I hope she doesn't have one of those high, squeaky voices like the mice in Cinderella. I hate that. Why am I even doing this? Why am I compelled to even meet her? Why?
Why indeed? It was always that formula, like, there's no way this is going to work out and become a romantic relationship, but then it does. Was there a pretty solid formula back in those days?
Yeah, I mean, there always has been with romantic comedy films. The genre's been around since, you know, the beginning of cinema, and they tend to talk about it as kind of a meet-lose-get narrative pattern. You know, the two people meet, things seem to be going well, then suddenly things are not going well, and then eventually they get back together.
No way.
Yeah. And, you know, in some ways, that pattern might be part of the problem, right? In the sense that right now, if we think about what romance and love looks like to individual people, it means very different things. And society's gotten a lot of, you know, society's changed a bit in terms of what they think and what they expect from couples. And so I think some of that is just, it's hard for movies to know what's going to stick with audiences when that older formula seems a little outdated at times.
Talking to Catherine Morrissey from San Francisco State University, looking at the fall of the big box office romantic comedy, but not the disappearance. And that's a big part of your piece, Catherine. You say romantic comedies, yeah, they weren't the dominant big box office movies, but they never really went away. How have they transformed over the years?
Yeah, so something interesting happened in the 90s when we started to see the indie film industry kind of build up a bit. A lot of these very romantic and very funny films were still being made alongside the kind of traditional blockbusters like You've Got Mail, but suddenly, you know, they might be starring two men falling in love, or they might be talking about two women. We also saw in the early 2000s and into the 2010s a lot of films with large ensembles of African-American actors, you know, telling multiple love stories. And these films didn't necessarily get the kind of media attention and box office numbers that something like You've Got Mail did, but they were certainly perfectly solid, successful films that did well within their own kind of markets. You know, if it's an independent film, it's not going to sell as many tickets necessarily as Crazy Rich Asians, but they were critically acclaimed and well-received.
But in your piece, you write they weren't always classified under the romantic comedy label. They were, you know, African-American films, say.
Yeah, exactly. And you see that happen a lot, right? Because the romantic comedy label isn't just about the story being told. It's also about how the film is marketed in the industry. And if rom-com is an idea that is kind of packaged typically with straight white people who are relatively well-off financially, then these other films start to be, you know, maybe marketed as something else. Maybe they're marketed as queer cinema or as independent films or as urban comedy, you know, something like that. So you see them circulate in different ways. You know, something like 40-Year-Old Virgin, for example, you know, in many ways that's a romantic film. It's a funny film. It's a romantic comedy, but that's not necessarily what it was sold as.
I want to give a listen. You just mentioned Crazy Rich Asians from 2018, a scene here with Constance Wu and Henry Golding as the two main characters.
I know this is a far throw from A Hidden Paradise, but wherever you are in the world, that's where I belong.
But I...
Rachel Chu, will you marry me and make me the happiest man in this world?
Yes, 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 I will marry you!
All right, so that sounds pretty standard in terms of romantic comedy. How does this fit the template, and are there ways in which it didn't, Crazy Rich Asians?
I mean, in many ways, it 100% did, which is, I think, why so many people saw its incredible success as a sign that, okay, now romantic comedy is back. You know, it's a very classic, traditional, funny love story. In other ways, it's not quite traditional. I mean, it's a film that has a predominantly Asian cast. That's definitely not something we're used to seeing in romantic comedies, especially not with the kind of box office sales that this film got. But in many ways, it's the same old story.
And one thing that was a twist there, though, there was you write there was some hope that Crazy Rich Asians would do really well in Asia because it featured Asian characters, and it didn't. Is there something about romantic comedy that just has a hard time translating from, I don't know, one language to another, one culture to another?
People have said that. That's definitely something that's been speculated, that perhaps, you know, because romantic comedy, ultimately, it's reflecting a certain norm within a particular society, it tends to. So, you know, that doesn't always translate well. And comedy also doesn't always translate well from culture to culture. But, you know, Crazy Rich Asians, it was interesting when the book was getting optioned for movie rights, there was quite a kind of bidding war over who would get this film. And one of the things that was said at the time was that there was this real hope that it would do quite well in Asia. And I think it was pretty disappointing when it really struggled to kind of get an audience, particularly in China.
Now let's talk about the guy thing. I think there's a stigma sometimes among men that romantic comedies are movies for women and thus not for me if I'm a guy. Is that part of maybe what led to the changes from it being a big box office presence?
I think that's a big part of it. I think that traditionally this is a niche that the film industry has used as kind of what they call, you know, the chick flick programming. And that's not necessarily to say that a diverse range of people don't enjoy these movies. And that's not to say that they can't, you know, hit with a lot of different folks around the world. But in terms of Hollywood, they've certainly been seen as a product for women. And they've been marketed as such. And that sort of kind of creates a kind of norm that says that, well, men maybe shouldn't watch this. And maybe they should run away and watch The Avengers instead or something like that. So, yeah, I think there's definitely some stigma attached to that. And it's something that is a bit of a problem because, you know, again, you see films like 40-Year-Old Virgin or different kind of Judd Apatow projects, which would definitely be romantic comedies, but we're not going to feel comfortable calling them that because there's this perception that that'll scare away certain audiences.
We're talking to Catherine Morrissey, assistant professor in the School of Cinema at San Francisco State University. We're talking about romantic comedies, what some people call a rebirth of the romantic comedy. She doesn't buy that. After the success of Crazy Rich Asians and other romantic comedies on Netflix, you can join in at 800-642-1234. What counts as a romantic comedy to you? What is your favorite past, present, distant past, older classics, maybe? Do you see a romantic comedy element in a movie like The 40-Year-Old Virgin or Knocked Up? Is this something that'll get you to a theater, or is this something that will get you scrolling through, say, Netflix to find a romantic comedy at home? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we continue our conversation about the romantic comedy genre, how it's changed since the 1980s, why some think we're seeing a rebirth of the genre. Our guest says it's been there all along. It's just changed in some ways, including how we watch it. Catherine Morrissey is with us from San Francisco State University's School of Cinema. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you love romantic comedies? Do you hate them? Do you love to hate them? Is there a favorite, a current one from back in the 80s and 90s, or maybe from a Hollywood golden age era? What do you think about romantic comedies? Do you want to see more of them in theaters? Do you appreciate that they pop up on a streaming service like Netflix? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We heard from MC on Facebook who said the golden oldies were more romantic, but oh so sexist. Catherine, I don't know which golden oldie era she's talking about exactly, but is there something there, maybe in any era?
I mean, I think it depends on the individual film, but they certainly tend to echo the norms of the time. And if the norms of the time are a bit sexist, that can tend to wind up in the film as well. But, you know, everyone always kind of looks back at the past and as if it's always been exactly the same. And, you know, there's been a lot of different waves and cycles to romantic comedy. Some people look back at the screwball romances from the, you know, early 1930s and as a time when there was a lot of really kind of interesting, fast-talking heroines. So it's not necessarily consistently sexist. It tends to vary a bit.
Now, there's that movie. I actually saw this in the theater. It was Rebel Wilson, and it was a romantic comedy kind of takeoff, playing on the variations of the romantic comedy and the, you know, the themes and things like that, but kind of trying to keep a distance from it. Do we have that ironic relationship with the rom-com sometimes?
Yeah, and you know, what's interesting is a lot of the romantic comedies that came out in the 80s and the 90s really made that a part of the story. You know, if you look at something like Sleepless in Seattle, a huge part of the conversation in that movie is about other romantic movies and how the heroine, Meg Ryan, in Sleepless in Seattle, feels about romance. So we're kind of obsessed with talking about this formula and thinking about whether it works or not and how we feel about it. And then ultimately, we still want to see the happy ending at the end, so we loop back around to it.
Well, let's talk a little bit about not the movies themselves, but how we watch them and how we get them. That's with any kind of movie, that's changed a lot in just the last few years. How has that affected the romantic comedy?
Well, that's something that I'm really interested in, because when Crazy Rich Asians came out, it wasn't just that film that made people say that it felt like the romantic comedy was back. At the exact same time, Netflix had launched this campaign that they called their Summer of Love, and they were releasing a bunch of different romantic comedy films. The big one that got, I think, the most attention was To All the Boys I've Loved Before. And that was, by Netflix's standards, an incredibly well-received film as well. And you see Netflix investing a ton of money in building up that category in their database. So it seems like on streaming services like Netflix, this is seen as a genre that they really want to invest in and that people, they perceive their subscribers are very interested in.
Let's go to a caller now at 800-642-1234. We've got Cindy on the line in Appleton. Cindy, hi.
Hello. Well, I would just like to say that with all the violence that's in the movies nowadays, a romantic comedy is a breath of fresh air and a change of pace from all the violence.
Interesting, Cindy. Thanks a lot. Do you see that as part of the appeal, Catherine?
Yeah, I think, you know, people love to, it's, you know, we like to indulge in serious stories and fun stories. You know, we need all of the above to get through our lives in this world today.
Thanks again, Cindy, for that call. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts on romantic comedies, love of or dislike of same. Catherine Morrissey stays with us, assistant professor in the School of Cinema at San Francisco State University. So you mentioned, Catherine, that Summer of Love at Netflix. Did that stick around? Did they keep up that pace of romantic comedy release, or did it fizzle again since then?
It seems to have stuck around, and they seem to be consistently bringing in more and more romantic comedies into the Netflix database. And we also see recently Hulu launched their own version of Four Weddings and a Funeral. So there's definitely some kind of interest in it from the streaming services. And part of what's been interesting on Netflix is they seem to really strategically be investing in a lot of different versions of romantic comedy. They have different kinds of queer romance. They have international romances in the mix. And then they have stories like To All the Boys I Loved Before, which is going to have a sequel coming out in basically the next week or two. And then is in theory going to have a third iteration in the trilogy coming out as well.
And as you mentioned, we're seeing more diverse looks in romantic comedies. Is that changing the structure, the plot of the movie, or is it just kind of the same formula with a different demographic?
I'd say a little of both. It tends to follow a very similar plot line, but one of the things I've been noticing is that the endings of these stories are sometimes getting a little more ambivalent. Like, there's a really interesting film on Netflix. And of course, I'm blanking on the name as I talk to you. It's The Adventures of Jessica Jones or Jessica James. I apologize for not remembering. But that film is this wonderful story about a young woman trying to figure out her life and her career and her love life. And then I don't want to spoil the ending, but when you get to the ending, it's not necessarily what you would consider a traditional romantic ending. So there seem to be ways that the formula might be getting poked at a little bit, even if it's not totally being destabilized.
We've got a listener email. Our listener says, I think streaming services are the new home for romantic comedies. I love being at home in front of the fire and watching a rom-com. I don't see the genre as something I would pay to see in a movie theater. My latest favorite is Always Be My Maybe on Netflix. Romantic comedies starring stand-up comedians are the new rom-com. Okay, we got a lot to work with there. Always Be My Maybe, first of all.
I thought Always Be My Maybe was really, really fun. And part of what was so interesting about it is, again, you've got a film with predominantly Asian cast, and they're, you know, the people involved in that project are so aware of the way that Asian Americans have been traditionally represented in the media, and they're taking this very traditional love story. They're having fun with the formula and really purposefully trying to poke at people's stereotypes and assumptions about Asian Americans as well. That was a really enjoyable film. I also think what that person just said really echoes back to what the earlier caller said, right? If these films for many people are comfort viewing, what's more comfortable than doing it at home?
And well, the other thing there is, and I think a lot of people have had this thought process that I have, okay, that movie, it's got a lot of special effects. It's a big visual thing. That's the one I need to see at a theater. That's not usually going to be true of the romantic comedy. So I'm just as well off seeing it home on the TV.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And, you know, it kind of fits with, you know, where Hollywood seems to be spending its money right now. They're very interested in these big budget, incredibly expensive global franchises because they think that's the reason why people will come to the movie theaters. And if people are less inclined to go see the romantic comedy at the movie theaters, well, then it probably makes sense that someone like Netflix is going to be the place where those films seem to be popping up more.
Oh, I got an assist from a producer here. The Incredible Jessica James was the movie title. It wasn't on the tip of my tongue either. Yeah. So I'm seeing sometimes now with movies these hybrid releases where it's, you know, it's not theater and then months later it comes to, you know, a streaming service. They do this joint release. Is that the wave of the present, I guess, not even future?
You know, I think that's an excellent question. I wonder, it could be. I wonder if they're experimenting with that to see if they get enough ticket sales in the movie theater to justify a release in movie theaters. I think we'll have to wait and see where this goes, because from my end of things, it looks like a lot of this is the industry testing to see where these products might still be viable.
Now, you've done a lot of work on romantic comedies. You've got this three-part series. You're writing on it. Are they still fun? Do you still enjoy them after digging into them kind of deeply?
I do. I totally do. Although I always confess that part of the reason why I got fascinated with romance and romantic comedies in general is because of my constant ambivalent response to them. Some of them I love. Some of them I'm frustrated by. I would fight about them with my mother and my grandmother. All of us would have different opinions. And that's part of why I got so interested in them, because I think they provoke these responses from us where we both love and hate them and are distressed by them but want to see more of them. And I think that's a huge part of the fun.
What can be frustrating about a rom-com in particular for you?
Oh, you know, when I was growing up, you know, I was a young girl. I had, you know, strong feminist, was figuring out that I was queer. And I definitely had the sense that, like, you know, I really wish the stories were a little more diverse. I wanted to see different kinds of love stories. I didn't always want to see everyone ending and feeling like they were going to get married the next day. And I think that's the part that always frustrated me. I just wanted a bigger mix of stories and representing different kind of experiences around the world. And, you know, that's the place I think they're still kind of struggling. But, you know, hopefully we're seeing some change and some diversity.
In our last minute or so, what are you watching for the future of the rom-com?
Well, I am really excited for the second part in the To All the Boys I Loved Before saga. I have to admit, I've made plans to watch that on Netflix next week. I'm also very curious to see what happens and if we get a sequel for Crazy Rich Asians.
Catherine, thanks so much for joining us. It's been a lot of fun.
Thanks so much.
That was Catherine Morrissey, assistant professor in the School of Cinema at San Francisco State University. She was with us today to talk about her three-part series at Flow Journal, looking at the evolution of romantic comedies, how they've changed over time, how they've stayed the same over time as well. Still time for you to share your thoughts or maybe just your rom-com recommendations. You can tweet us at Central Time WPR. Or head over and share your thoughts on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Maybe you can give people a playlist for the next couple weeks of romantic comedies.